Okay, now that's completely not quite right. All right, now it's gone. It's gone. Yeah, I suppose in terms of my time overseas, certainly, I think when I look back on my time overseas, certainly there are some sort of, there were moments, you know, where security incidents, there were things that you saw each day that you know that were quite tough. But I think for most development workers or people working in humanitarian aid, you know, you're really focused on getting the job done, and I wouldn't say you become numb to it, but you certainly, I think you derive some satisfaction from being able to do something about it, you know, rather than being back at home and watching a lot of things on television or reading about things. So, yeah, although it was difficult, I mean, certainly in Northern Uganda, working with people who were living in camps far from where they used to live, in really close quarters, and then in Eastern Congo, working amongst communities that had been suffering from, you know, from war all their lives, really, and no end in sight to the conflict there. So it was certainly challenging, and also I think made me very grateful for, you know, what I had myself, you know, how lucky I was, and to be, you know, brought up in a country where I had freedom, I had, you know, I had a certain measure of wealth compared to a lot of people I was working alongside. That's correct. I think it's probably to try and paint a picture. I mean, Sierra Leone is a beautiful country. It's got amazing, you know, gorgeous sort of green agricultural land. It's also got beautiful beaches, and you know, from my perspective, you know, it's got so much potential. And I saw, you know, in the 2 years I worked there, very much positive sort of moves and strides towards developments, with more roads opening up, electrification starting. So I see a big change, you know, with the Ebola coming in, where communities that were, you know, really busy and bustling and trading with one another, suddenly, you know, your district is in quarantine. So it's like the whole of Fife. You know, you're not allowed to move out of Fife without a pass card in some description or other. So, you know, you're effectively locked into your own county. Now, for some people in Fife, that might be a good thing, I don't know, but certainly for, you know, places in Sierra Leone that, you know, depend on trading with one another, there's a really big impact on your livelihood. And then obviously you've got the fear of Ebola itself, with families just being ripped apart by, you know, losing family members overnight, seeing them go off in an ambulance and never for them to return again. So, you know, a lot of fear certainly within the communities, a lot of stigma for those who are on the front line, you know, health workers who, amazing sort of courage going in to care directly, you know, for, for people, for communities, and, you know, not being able to go home to their own communities because people are afraid of catching, you know, Ebola from the health workers, and also those who are now involved in burying the dead. You know, there's a huge amount of stigma around just effectively helping people. So it's a very complex disease and unprecedented, I think, in terms of for most of us development workers, you know, we've never worked in a situation like that before. So there's been a massive difference, you know, where you would normally shake somebody's hand in greeting. Now, you know, nobody touches one another at all. There's just, you know, everybody just keeps to themselves. It's very quiet at night. There's curfews in place, so people aren't able to gather together. So yeah, it's a lot quieter, a lot. And yeah, there's, although people are trying to get on as best as they can with their daily lives because they have to, there's definitely a massive change. Yeah. Yeah, they are. They are, but I think also there's, yeah, there is a lot of superstition, you know, in a lot of the communities in which we work, and you know, and a lot of the rural areas, education levels are quite low. You know, often cultural beliefs kind of hold more sway than practical information. And I'm sure there are individuals within the communities that, you know, that we work in who aren't, you know, aren't like that. Maybe it's a case of the local minority, but certainly we know, you know, that when community members come back home, people will shout names at them, or, you know, they won't get on the public transport with them, and there is a fear. And what we're trying to do as agencies is to work with these communities to, you know, to really educate them and to help them to accept, you know, everybody that's working on the front line, and to, you know, to really celebrate these individuals that are doing so much. And I think that goes some way to, you know, to raise the profile of those individuals and to support them. The more that we can kind of celebrate and really thank them for what they're doing, I think the rest of the community will hopefully come with us and see. Actually, they should be thanking them and not, you know, not shunning them. So I'm back. I've finished my contract in August, in the middle of August, and I'm now basically back in London, working on proposals for the country, looking for Sierra Leone, looking at activities in the post-Ebola response. So my role has been taken over by somebody who's got more specialist health background. So my focus is more on supporting those families that are affected indirectly. So looking at sourcing funds for food security, you know, for seeds, for food for families that are going to be struggling come January, and also looking at the impact on the health system. So how can we build that trust once the Ebola crisis settles down? What should we be doing to build that trust with health workers, health centres and the communities? Because there's a big problem with, a big issue we find is on maternal mortality. So that is the number of women that are dying in childbirth. Now, because of Ebola, women are not going to health centres to have children. So they're having them at home, more women will die, more children will die. And, you know, we want to be ready once this dies down to also, you know, to start to help those communities to recover from the impact of this, you know, really awful disease. So it's not clear at this moment at what point, if and when I will go back. It's a quite a fluid situation, and over the next few weeks. So, but you know, I'd go back in a heartbeat. And there's nothing that would stop me from doing that. Yeah.